All right. Who's ready to read the Bible? Anybody? All right. A couple of you guys. Cool. Hey, I'm going to put a slide up real quick, and I want you guys to look at it, and I want you guys to tell me what we're going to study about tonight. Ray will put it up. What are we studying about tonight, guys? Or today. Sorry, today. David and Goliath, right? Now, that's the story we know of David, right? That he fought Goliath. Who knows anything else about David? Okay. He had to run from King Saul. Right, right. Now, anybody else? What about you? He was a shepherd. Incident with Bathsheba. That's probably the black spot. Anybody else? Anything else about David that you guys would know? Well, go ahead. He wrote a bunch of Psalms. Okay. Now, this book is in our bookstore if you guys are interested. It's for, I believe, three and up. So you guys should be qualified. And when you open this book, it gives you stories about the Bible. It gives you stories about people in the Bible. And it talks about David. And I'm not going to read it. Last night I read it, and I think it got a little boring because we're all above this level. But David, shepherd, Goliath, and David fought Goliath. That's all it says. And then it goes right into Elijah. So this is all that my son, who's 3 years old, is learning about David. And that's pretty much, from what I take, we know about him being a shepherd, we know about him writing Psalms, and we know about him fighting Goliath and running from Saul. We're going to talk today, next week we're going to have a little bit more about Goliath, and we're going to have a little bit more about David's life. But we're going to talk kind of about what happened before this event. What happened, why is David there, who is David, and what makes him such a special man of the Bible, because when I think of David, or when I think of the Bible, I think of David. David is one of my key figures other than Jesus in the Bible, and I was wondering, why is that? What makes David so special when it comes to David and Goliath? And we're going to kind of look today about how God grooms each and every one of us, and how God groomed David for not just this battle with David and Goliath, but more importantly, to be the king of Israel, be the king of the Jews, to expand the empire. And we're also gonna see how his grooming and how his preparation prepared him to be essentially the great, I don't know exactly how far, but a lot of great-great-grandfathers of Jesus. And it takes a special man for God to say, hey, I'm going to send my son through your blood. So we're going to look at preparation of David's life. And what Webster's Dictionary defines preparation is as the action or process of making something ready for use or service, or of getting ready for some occasion, test, or duty. And that's exactly what we see in David's life. God prepared him for actions and making him ready for service and getting him ready for a certain occasion. And what we see here on this slide right here is what true preparation is for me. I just got back. I was in school of ministry this year. We just got back from a Belize mission trip, and we had a lot of preparation. Eric Avalos was with me here. We had a lot of preparation for this. It was a huge two-week mission trip, and we did preparation. And it was really funny how some of the stuff that happened all year paid off while we were there. It was funny how when we went down to Mexico, we had to move dirt. Just dirt. I don't know why we were moving dirt. We moved dirt, but it paid off because in Belize, guess what? We moved dirt. So it was really weird how it kind of just domino effect in. But this is the Velocity mission trip to Mexico team. And we see preparation that they did, okay? In the middle is my favorite. I'm a janitor. Adam's a janitor here at church. And the thing that I love is these guys went around campus and cleaned all the bathrooms on campus. This team, bunch of your students, went out and cleaned bathrooms. They had team building games. They have like this tent pole game. And they're kind of sometimes real frustrating games, but they help you learn to be a teammate and learn how to pull together and really work together. And there was food, there was games, there was a lot of time of prayer, and there was Bible study, and there was sleep. They did all this in one day. They got here about 8 o'clock in the morning, and they were done at about 8 o'clock at night. And so for that 12 hours, they spent constant preparation for a 10-day mission trip. And my question was, you know, this is how much they're preparing for 10 days. How much am I preparing for our lives? Or how much are we preparing for our lives? We have a goal that God has for us. We have a plan God has for us. And what are we doing to prepare? Because I don't do this kind of stuff for my life. I tend to only do this when I have a set time period, when I have a set goal, when I know what that goal is. And I think that's the key that a lot of us lose on, and I especially lose on. These guys know what they're preparing for. They're preparing for a mission trip to Juarez. But I'm not preparing for what God has for me because guess what? I don't know what God has for me. Because I don't know what God has for me, it's kind of hard for me to prepare. And that's kind of where I started looking at David's life. And I kind of, after I was done, I kind of laughed because I was like, you know what? I don't need to know. David didn't know what God had for him, but God did, and God prepared him. And we're going to look tonight at David and how he was prepared in two different ways that I see. But let me just kind of give like a little thing out there. Imagine if God didn't prepare David the way he did, how would that battle with Goliath have turned out? Could you imagine if David would have gone out to Goliath, not prepared, didn't have the stones, and just walked out? He would have been slaughtered. It would have looked like a horrible wrestling match. David would have been wiped up, and Goliath would have victored, and we would not probably have the rest of the Bible. But God did prepare him, and God did make him ready for that. And if you have your Bibles, we're going to open up 1 Samuel 16, and we're going to start in verse 6. We're starting mid-chapter. So before we get into the reading, let me kind of set up and give a structure of what's going on here and why we pick this story up when we pick it up. And it starts off with Samuel. Samuel is the prophet to Israel. Samuel was the last judge of Israel. And during the time of the judges, God was king of Israel. God was in charge. God was the figure. But the Jews weren't happy with God, if you can believe that. They weren't happy. They wanted to be like all the other countries and have a king. They had peer pressure on them big time. And they succumbed to the peer pressure. They wanted to have that king. So God said, Samuel, it's nothing you did. Don't get saddened, you know. I'm going to let them have the king that they want. So the Jews pick the king that they want. They pick Saul. And Saul has fallen out of glory with God. He's not exactly living up to what they thought he would be. So God comes again to Samuel and says, hey, Samuel, I found the next king of Israel, and he lives at Jesse's house in Bethlehem. And he said, now go there, and I'll show you king. So Samuel is on a trip to Bethlehem. He knows that there's an election of sorts coming up, kind of like there's going to be an election next year for the president, but we don't know who it's going to be. Same like Samuel. He didn't know who he's going to pick to be king. He just knew God would tell him when he got there. So Samuel, you know, is probably a little eager. He's kind of bubbling inside going, who's this next king? I wonder if he's going to be bigger and badder than Saul. You know what I mean? How great is this guy going to be? So we'll pick up in verse 6. And it says, so it was when they came that he looked at Eliab and said, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. Eliab, right now they're sitting in a tent, and Samuel and Jesse, who's the father, are sitting there, and Jesse's bringing his sons in so they can be elected, per se. So Eliab, and he said, Lord's anointed is before him. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at his physical stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord does not see as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. So Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass before Samuel. And he said, neither has the Lord chosen this one. Then Jesse made Shema pass by, and he said, neither has the Lord chosen this one. Thus Jesse made seven of his sons pass before Samuel. And Samuel said to Jesse, the Lord has not chosen these. And Samuel said to Jesse, are all the young men here? Then he said, there remains yet the youngest, and there he is, keeping the sheep. And Samuel said to Jesse, send to bring him, for we will not sit down till he comes here. Just so you guys know, don't get kind of stuck up on that last part, we will not sit down till he comes here. That just means we're not going to have dinner until I see them all. Because, you know, obviously these first seven didn't work. So we're looking here, and from the first, what is this, six verses of this, we don't even hear about David. We don't even hear David's name, but yet that's who Samuel's there to choose. So I wanted to start off by going, who was David? We don't know anything about him from these verses other than what we found out earlier is he's a shepherd. That's the one you guys said. He's a shepherd. And I picked this picture because, well, I went online and I figured, hey, that's what I picture David as, right? You know, cool little shepherd boy. That's what I think a shepherd boy should look like. But one of the things that I found out that who David was is he was under 14 years old at the time. So if David was around nowadays, if David was here, he would actually be here. He would be in Velocity. David is a Velocity student with you guys, and yet he is the next king of Israel, which for me is pretty phenomenal because I probably wouldn't put you as president of the United States, any of you guys, but God had prepared David already to handle this kind of situation. The other thing we all know is that he was a shepherd. That's everyone pretty much knows David is a shepherd. And I thought that was by David's choice for a long time. I thought David wanted to be a shepherd. David probably aspired to be this great shepherd boy, and they would have pictures like this of him his whole life. Well, that's not the case. I found out that David was a shepherd because he had to be. He was forced to be by his family. Now, how many of you guys in here are the youngest child of all your siblings? Okay? All the people with your hands up right now, you guys are all shepherds. Period. That's it. Back in Israel, back in this time, if you were the youngest son or youngest daughter, preferably the son, but if you're the youngest, you're there taking care of the livestock. So you guys right now wouldn't be at church. You guys would be at home taking care of the dog or the cat or the goat or the fish or the sheep. Whatever they had at the time, you guys would be there taking care of. And it's kind of a bad deal because you guys don't even have a choice. All the ones that raised your hand, all your older siblings are out living life. They get to have a good time. They get to come to church. They get to go to have a job. They get to get married. They get to have kids. But because you're the youngest, you're stuck. Sorry. It's just how it is. You guys got to live with it. You know, and that's where David was. And I thought, well, that's kind of a junky deal for David. You know what I mean? This guy didn't even have a choice. But just because David didn't choose to be a shepherd, that doesn't mean God didn't have that chosen for him. Because if you know anything about shepherding, that's a key role to being a leader, is being able to guide people where you want them to be. He's going to be the shepherd of Israel one day, and he couldn't have ever been the shepherd of Israel if he wasn't the shepherd of sheep. So we kind of learned some lessons in the field there. And what we get from these six verses, first off, we don't even hear his name. All we hear is that he's another son. So in all honesty, let's describe David so far. David's a nobody. He's a runt. He's a leftover. And more importantly to his family, he's a joke. He's nothing. This guy that they write stories about now, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 years later, is a joke to his own family. He's not even taken seriously amongst his brothers. And more importantly, his dad knows why Samuel's there. His dad knows, Jesse knows that Samuel's coming to choose a king. And let me tell you, I have two sons and I have another one coming in a couple months. So I have three sons, and let's say 5 years from now someone comes and says, hey, we're going to pick your son to be the pastor of this incredibly huge church. Well, if I don't know who it is, I'm going to bring all my sons up and say, hey, just choose one, I'll be happy. You know what I mean? Just pick one. That's such a compliment to a father. That's kind of what you want to do for your children. Just pick any of them, I'll be happy. Well, Jesse didn't even think David was worth it. Jesse left David out of this big event. This guy, this prophet of Israel is coming, and Jesse didn't even bother bringing him in. Jesse had eight sons, and he only thought seven of them were even worthy. And only really, he thought the first three were. Those first three are his pride and joy. Those are the ones that are going to carry on the name and the legacy. So we have David. He's a nobody, and he's a runt. But one of the things that I read this week, Chuck Swindoll wrote a book, and it's called David. And a really good book. If you guys ever get a chance, really good book. And it really just talks about David. He does a whole series of books on Elijah, and he does some women of the Bible. He just does this great books. But he talked about, because David was kind of a reject of his family, because he was a joke of his family, because he was the outcast, he was very secluded in his life. He was secluded, first off, away from his family. He wasn't a part of the family functions, but he was also secluded by being a shepherd. By being a shepherd, you're out with just sheep. You don't have any interaction with people. So he was secluded. And Chuck Swindoll says this in his book. David grew up in obscurity. That's another way God trains his best personnel, is in obscurity. Men and women of God, servant leaders in making, are first unknown, unseen, unappreciated, and unapplauded. And the relentless demands of obscurity, character is built. And that really was a great message for me. It was positive because you can ask Adam after service. Being a janitor is not the best position. I got to tell you guys, cleaning up your guys' bathrooms after the mess you guys make in those bathrooms, that's not fun. We don't get awards for being a janitor. We don't even get you guys coming up to us saying, wow, guys, those windows sure look streak-free. You know, we don't get that. You know what I mean? We essentially have a job that, although it's seen, it's expected. You know what I mean? We live in this church as obscurity. When you think of Calvary Chapel, you think of probably Skip Heitzig, Kevin Miller. You think of these people. You may think of some of your leaders here, but you don't think, wow, those janitors of Calvary Chapel. Good people, good guys. No, you don't. You don't think that, because being in our position, it's kind of just we're the last on the totem pole. We kind of clean up the mess after everyone else. But it was positive to see that God will use that. God will use whatever to kind of shape you and where he wants you to be. So we know who David was. We know that he was a shepherd. We know that he was kind of the reject of his family. He was kind of the Cinderella, if you would, of Jesse's family. He was kind of like doing all the work while the others got the glory. Now we're going to look at why David. What made David so special that God would choose him? And the first thing, if you guys get anything from this message, the one thing you need to know about David, he is a man after God's own heart. A man after God's own heart. It says it in 1 Samuel 13:14, before actually where we're reading right now. God is talking to Samuel, and Samuel relayed this message to Saul. And I'm just going to take an excerpt from that, and it says, "The Lord has sought for himself a man after his own heart." So Samuel's telling Saul this, saying, "Hey, Saul, your time is numbered. You're not going to be king anymore because God has found someone that is a man after his own heart, a man who cares only about God." And I thought, well, that's great. You know, I would hope that all of us in here that are Christians, that we'd all be after God's own heart. We'd all have a mission to strive after his heart, right? I mean, that's what it is to be a Christian. We want to be after God. I mean, that's what we say, at least. But how many of us really know what that means? How many of us are really sincere about that? I mean, I thought I was. I mean, I'm up here teaching, right? I should be a man after God's own heart. I work at the church. I should be a man after God's own heart. I come to every service. I should be a man after God's own heart. Well, there was one other person in the Bible that I know of that was kind of what I would describe as a servant to God. He was God's like right-hand man, servant kind of thing. And that was Paul. Paul refers to himself in his epistles at the end of the Bible. Out of his epistles, four of them, he refers to himself as a bond servant. And I didn't know what that was. I know what bond is. It's something to get you out of jail. And I know what a servant is, right? You know, servant is someone that does chores. Okay, well, so I'm going to be a guy who gets people out of jail and does chores for God? Well, that's not what it means, all right? So I looked it up, and you guys don't have to know this. I like to kind of sound smart sometimes. So I looked up the Greek word for bondservant, and it's doulos, all right? Doulos means this: one who gives himself up to another's will, those whose services are used by Christ in extending and advancing his cause among men. And this last one is kind of the one I like. Devoted, a person who is devoted to another that they disregard their own interests and only think of the interest of that other person. So the thing you need to know about David, he didn't care what was ahead of him. He didn't care what battle he was going to go into. He didn't care about Goliath. He didn't care about Saul chasing him around trying to kill him. All he cared about was what God wanted. As long as God wanted him to do it, he's doing it. And if that meant him dying, all right, cool, I'm dying. That means I get to go to heaven with you, God. How bad is that? And that's what I take from David. He was in sync. He was right with God. He was almost like on a leash. I mean, God went this way, he went that way. He was just following the whole time. He didn't look anywhere else. He didn't care what anyone else said. That's what he is. And I had to think this week, and it was really hard, especially last night. I taught this message last night. Right before I thought, I was like, that's what it means to be a man after God's own heart. Well, I'm not a man after God's own heart, honestly. I mean, there are things in my life that I love. I love living in Albuquerque. I love my kids. I love my wife. I love being here with you guys. I love teaching here at Calvary of Albuquerque. But if God asked me to go somewhere else, well, I'd probably say, where is it? Where do you want me to go? Oh, Afghanistan? I don't think so, homie. I'm not doing that. I like my life here. I like living in my nice house and driving my junky car and living in America. You know, if you guys have ever been outside of America, that's not for me. I'm an American at heart. I like being comforted. I like TV. I like being able to, you know, just hang out on the weekends. They don't have that in other countries. And I had to think, if God called me away, I may not be a man after God's own heart. And I look at other people that are around me and I think, those guys have like some ambition. Like I look at Adam in the back. He's going to go to Israel in a couple months to go to school. And he's not even wondering how he's going to pay for it. He's not wondering why. He's just saying, this is where God told me. If you ask him, he'll say, God slapped me upside the head and said, you're going to Israel. And he's like, yes, Lord, take me. And for me, I'm not that. And I had to be real honest with myself and say, that's not me. So I already know by this much into the message that this message is talking to me more than it probably is talking to you guys, because it's saying, hey, Jay, you need to get your life on track, and you need to be a servant of myself. You need to be on track with me. You need to be on my leash. You're not pulling me. I'm pulling you. And that's kind of, if you want to think of something, what it means to be a man after God's own heart, you're not leading God. He's leading you, and you just follow where he goes. And that's a true servant of God. So why David? First reason, most important reason, man after God's own heart, servant of God. Second reason, which I love this part about his life, is he was physically ready. He had already been through so much by your guys' age. He was ready to be king. He was ready. If you guys can believe that, we'll see in 1 Samuel 17, 34 through 35. This is David kind of pleading his case with Saul later on about why he should be able to go fight against Goliath. And and Saul's probably, you know, much like I would, if you guys said, hey, I'm going to go to war, I'm going to tell you, I don't think so, guys. You guys are probably too small, too young. You guys don't know enough. You probably couldn't even hold up a gun, you know. That's what Saul's telling David. And David said, but Saul, your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. And when a lion or a bear came and carried off one of the sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. And when the lion or bear turned on me, I seized it by its hair and struck it and killed it. And this version here, I don't know what version I have, but I like this version. It says, I caught it by its beard, all right? I have a goatee. It's not that long. But I can imagine lions and bears, you know, they got that just extra fur right here or whatever. And you could just see David grabbing it and, just nailing it right in the head, you know? But this is who it is. This is David on the left. This is you guys going up against a lion and a bear, okay? Now, personally, I'd be pretty impressed today. If any of you guys have been on campus before, you see the little bunny rabbits running around here? They're real cute, little Easter bunny looking rabbits, you know? I'd be impressed if any of you guys could even catch one of those rabbits, much less be able to kill it. And David's not only catching rabbits, he's going for, you know, the big dogs of nature. He's going after lions and bears, probably wolves, probably jackals. These are kind of what's around this area. This is what is taking over, kind of trying to get his sheep. And this is kind of like a cool analogy, but, you know, you have to look at it and say, well, how does that prepare him to be a king? Well, I mean, let me tell you honestly, if I fought a bear or a lion on a regular basis, I'd be pretty brave. I don't think a man could scare me, much less any other animal. So you're already seeing how God has prepared David by putting challenges into his life, putting things that have happened into his life to prepare him for this, get him to be brave enough, get him to be strong enough in his mind, get him prepared for running from Saul, from Bathsheba, from all these little problems, all these little bumps in the road that are going to come, he's going to be ready for, because God's already prepared him by the age of 14. And one of the things I want to clear up while we're here is this impression of David on the left here being this like sweet little shepherd boy. That's not the case, guys. I put it up there kind of mocking it because that's what we all think of. Who thinks that's probably, I mean, we all picture shepherds as that, right? Everyone agree that's kind of like what we picture a shepherd as? Well, I saw a picture. I couldn't get it for you guys. I wish I could have got it for you guys. And I read up on what a shepherd was back then. Well, he did have the little staff, and it had the little kink on the end kind of there, you know, and cool little rod, you know, that's what their trademark is. But the other thing they have is, see this club here with spikes sticking out of it? That's kind of a newer version of it. But back then, they used to have like this probably 4x6 post, kind of like a big post. And they would carry it over their shoulders, much like a bat, and they would hold like this. And at the end, they would drive nails or rusted pieces of metal. Or if they had glass or pottery, they would just drive it into this thing. So you had this big club, big bat with spikes on the end that they carry around all day. It's pretty heavy. They said it weighs anywhere between 15 and 20 pounds. Now, 15 or 20 pounds, they carry around their back all day. And if someone comes up and acts out of line, whack, they're done. That's what that club is for. So he has a staff, he has his club, And then also he has his sling. And this is no joke. This sling is not like, woohoo. It's not that at all. This is like a really good weapon. It has stones in it that they use. They're probably around that big, 4 to 5 inches. It's a pretty big rock, okay? Nice river, soft rock, so it doesn't snag on it. But if done properly, if you're well enough advanced, you can sling that rock to go through this wall. It would go through, all the way through that wall. That rock would go so fast. So David was a man with a bat and spikes. He had almost a gun. I mean, for something to go through that, and he was a really good aim. Shepherds had to be a really good aim, because if they saw a sheep, you know, about 100, 300 feet up, that was kind of wandering away, they would get a little stone, real small one, and they would, you know, swing it over around the rocks, you know, kind of like if you see one of these bunnies and you kind of throw a rock near it, it'll take back off this way. That's what they wanted to do. They wanted that sheep to go back with the herd. So they could just sit back, fling rocks, kill bears, you know. These guys were mean. They were tough. They were rough. They were not someone that I would want to mess with. And I couldn't imagine one of you guys being like that, but that's who David was. That's who David was. He was a man who had already been put through the fires, had already been tested enough to be able to handle Goliath like nothing. That's why David acts like it was nothing. He blew it off. This man's nothing. I have God on my side. You guys can't touch me. I've fought lions and bears. You can't touch me. So we look, God prepares our hearts. God prepared David's heart. And he also prepared his life so he would come into contact with these challenges, with these problems in his life that he could kind of go through. So we know who David was. We know why David was chosen. And now we're going to look at the last kind of intricate part of why David was able to take over, become king, is because God not only was preparing David, he was also preparing all of Israel. And not the land, he was preparing the people of Israel. He was preparing the Jews. And the way he was doing this is, like we talked about earlier, Saul was chosen by them. And Saul's described a lot of times as a big guy, probably like 6'2", 6'3", built up. I mean, just imagine kind of like, you know, some of the wrestlers you see out there, like this big, massive guy, just all buffed up and dark hair, dark eyes, handsome guy. That's how he's described. And that's why they picked him. They picked him because he was pretty. I mean, let's be honest. They picked him because he seemed like he fit the role of what a king would be. He fit what they thought a king should look like. They want a representative for their country, so they picked the best-looking representative. Well, that's all and good, but at the time, Saul was okay with the Lord. But as he became king, it changed him. He stopped walking with the Lord, and because he stopped walking with the Lord, God's spirit left him. God essentially said, okay, you're on your own now. And when God left him, those perfect things that he had for Israel changed. Instead of being good-looking, he became thin-skinned. And instead of being, you know, handsome, he became angry. And instead of being like this good-looking, great man who seemed to be king, he had fits of massive, massive depression. And in this depression, he thought of murder. That's why we see Saul going after David so much. See, he was so depressed, he wanted to kill. And not only did he fight murder, he also fought suicide. And actually, at the end of Saul's life, he does commit suicide. It's not the way we think of suicide, but he was up against the wall, and he threw himself on his sword because he didn't want to go out like that. He was too depressed, and God just wasn't in him. And that's kind of what we see a lot of times in our lives, is when God leaves someone, they just get depressed. So Israel's prepared. Israel is disheartened. Israel is, you know, they're just kind of done with Saul. He's making bad decisions, not only with himself, but in battle. He totally blew a battle earlier that his son had to save him from. I mean, he's just doing terrible things. So Israel, the people of Israel, are almost to the point where they're like, well, if it was an election, we'd probably elect someone else. But they'd already chosen him, and there's no election back then. It's just, he's it until he dies. So they were kind of stuck with him. So that's why we see a lot of times, as we read on about David, when David would go out to battle and win these massive battles, that when he came back, the Jews would praise him and say, David has slain his 10,000s, but Saul only his thousands. And that sounds like, that doesn't mean anything to me, you know? But that's like saying, David is the man, and Saul's a has-been. You know, Saul's nothing. And that's because David came with such a light, came with such a brightness of God. And you could tell that he was God's chosen man, And you're just gravitated toward that. David, the people of Israel were gravitated toward David. And that's why it almost seemed like an easy transfer of power. And so that's, we have God preparing the heart of David, the preparation of God, David's life, and then also just preparing things around us. And that's kind of cool for me because I always think, like, how is God going to prepare me? Well, he does prepare me. But what's cool is he also prepares others. Like, why I'm up here, he prepared me for this message to give to you guys today. But he's also done things in your life. And maybe not all of you, maybe only one of you. Maybe not even a student, maybe a leader. He's prepared them through something that they're going through for my message to speak to them. So God not only prepares you, but he's preparing other things. So in a way, you don't have to be so fearful. I know a lot of times when you go out to, like, talk to your friends about Christ or what it means to be a Christian, you guys are like, well, you know, I know God's prepared me. I know what to say. But I just don't know. I don't know if they're ready for it. I don't know if they'll take it. Well, guess what? God's been preparing them, much like Israel is prepared for David. God's been putting things in their life to make them think already. But we don't know that. And so we have to just know that God's there for us. God's preparing us. And if he's preparing us, he's preparing whatever you're about to go into. So those are the three things we look at. The last thing we're going to do is we're going to read 1 Samuel 16 again. And we're just going to read 12 and 13, and it's going to kind of show us how God's preparation equals God's anointing. And in verse 12 it says, "So we sent and brought him in. Now David was ruddy and bright-eyed and good-looking. And the Lord said, 'Arise, anoint him, for this is the one.' Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. So Samuel arose and went to Ramah." So, just so you guys know, ruddy. Anybody know what ruddy means? No? It means redheaded. So if you guys are redheaded, you're ruddy. Or if you have red, rosy cheeks like Santa, ruddy. Okay, so that's what that means if you guys are curious. Ruddy, bright-eyed, and good-looking. I mean, for his age, he was probably good-looking. He was no Saul, but he was good-looking. And one of the things I like is right away, the other brothers, it was, no, that God's not presence isn't here. No, God, Lord hasn't chosen him. But right away, as soon as Samuel saw him, God said, anoint him. That's my man. And I get really kind of excited and stoked because it's kind of funny sometimes in your life, if you guys have experienced it, when God sets you up for things and he kind of puts things in motion, when they come together, it just is like that. It's just perfect. It's seamless. It's flawless. It just kind of fits together perfect. And I just love that about God. Like, he just knows, you know what I mean? And when you see stuff like that happen, you just got to sit back and go, this is my man, you know what I mean? God takes care of it. And when you see that, it's just one of those things I just love. You know, Adam, the same thing. Adam's going to Israel. He's going to, if God, that's where God's told him to go, he's going to find the money. He's going to get his house taken care of. He's going to be ready to go. And when he gets over there, he'll look back and go, that was easy. All I had to do was go. That was flawless. And I just love that about God. And the last thing we'll look at in our closing of the message is David's reaction to this. David is a nobody to his family. He's the runt of the family. He's the reject of the family. I mean, I can go on forever about what David was. David was nothing to his family. He was Cinderella. And when he got anointed in front of his brothers. And his reaction was, first off, not one of, like, he didn't try to back out. He wasn't like, whoa, I don't think so, crazy old man with your oil. I don't want to do that. He wasn't like that. He didn't say, you got the wrong guy. He didn't say, I'm not ready. I mean, we all do that. If someone says, I want you to go run a race tomorrow, 3 miles, you'll be like, I'm not prepared for that yet. Give me some time. Maybe I can learn. David just kept his mouth closed. He was just like, I'm fine with that. And the part that I really like is his humility. He came in the room. He got anointed. He was bold after this. God's Spirit came upon him and brought boldness to his life. He was bold going out to the battlefield with Goliath. He was bold facing Saul. He was bold in his life. But he was always humble about it. And even here, I got to tell you guys, I have brothers and sisters. I'm the oldest of six. And my sister right below me, Tori, she's old now. She's older. But when we were young, we're about 6-7 years apart. So I think she was like 2 when I was 9 or 10, somewhere around there. And my dad loved her. He was daddy's little girl, you know. And I was always in trouble. I was a troublemaker. So she always used to get like the good toys, the good treatment. She would always be able to go out with him and do all these things while I had to stay home and play the old pitiful, I get spanked and had to do my homework. It was just a terrible time, you know? Poor me. But there was one time I remember that she got spanked. And I got praised. I was able to go actually out and play in the backyard. And she got spanked because she messed up. And I'm not condoning this, and it's wrong of me to say, but I was pretty happy about that. I was like excited, like, woo, finally, I got it. You know, the guy who's always kind of left out, I'm the one now. She's getting punished. And that's what we see here in David. David's brothers probably didn't like him. He was probably just kind of the leftovers. And yet when David got anointed, he didn't just go up to his brothers and go, yeah, what's up now? I'm your king. No, he just was like, thank you, you know, and he walked away. He never went up to him and said, you're going to bow down to me one day. I'm going to be your king. I'm going to save you from Goliath. No, he never said that. He just kind of said, thank you, Lord, and walked away. And for me, that's a big challenge because I think a lot of times when we have things happen in our life good to us, whether it be in academics, sports, in your house, in your family, you kind of get a little puffed up. You kind of get a little brave, and you walk around a little cocky, and you're just kind of like, yeah, you know. I'm it. I'm me. Woo, look at me, you know. And David didn't do that. And that means a lot, you know. To have a guy that's so bold to go out and fight giants and to be king of a country yet be humble about it, that just doesn't happen too often. It rarely happens. And I just want you guys to take away the main thing of this whole message is God will prepare you, but it starts with your heart. It starts with your heart. If God prepares your heart, He'll prepare your life. He'll prepare your enemies. He'll prepare your allies. And He'll prepare everything for you, but it's got to start with you. It's got to start in your heart. So my challenge to you guys today is this. Some of you guys may be saying, I don't feel ready. I don't feel equipped yet for what God supposedly has for me. Or some of you guys may be saying, I don't think God even has a plan for me. I don't think He even cares about me. And I got to tell you guys, that's false. That's wrong. But if you're feeling that way, there's two things that we need to look at with you guys. There's two things I want you guys to look at yourself with are these. First off, your walk with God. We all know about the walk with God. Read your Bible, Bible study, you know. No, that's not what I'm talking about. That's important. But I want you guys to know, do you guys have a close walk with God? Not are you guys just reading your Bible daily, but does it mean something to you? Second, do you have an intimate walk with God? Andrew sang a song called Divine Romance. I love that song because that's what it is. I just feel so close to Him. I want to dance for Him. I want to sing for Him. I want to live for Him. Not me, not you, not my wife, not my kids. I love all of them, but I want to be with Him. I want to be intimate with Him. I want to feel like, you know, when you guys used to be sick as a little kid and your mom used to come up, you, especially boys, we get kind of girly when we get sick. We all kind of, you know. But when your mom used to come up and you used to cuddle with her as a little kid, or, you know, sometimes your dad will just hold you in his arms, that's what I want to feel. I want to feel that, like, closeness. I want to feel almost the heat coming off of His face. And the last thing you guys need to look at in your walk, do you even have a walk? If you guys don't have a walk, you will not be prepared. The next slide that we have, it kind of says fact on it. It says, our God is a God of preparation. But without Him, you will be lost. Period. Period, exclamation point. You will be lost if you're not prepared. And you cannot be prepared without walking with God. Flat out. You cannot expect to go do God's will if you don't know what God says about it. Period. And if you guys don't have that, you need to fix that. And if you guys are walking with God, but yet you guys still feel like I'm not equipped enough, well, there's ways to be equipped. You need to ask yourself, do I have any fellowship with other Christians? I mean, yeah, you guys are here, but this isn't fellowship. You're sitting next to someone, and if they probably touch you, you're probably like, ooh, you know. That's not fellowship, all right? Fellowship is getting in there, hanging out with them, knowing what's going on in your guys' life, knowing that he's trying to go 2 days without sleep, making it 4 days, and being there maybe to encourage him, as dumb as it is, saying, you can do it. Woo, 4 days, we're going to do it, you know. That's fellowship. That's a friendship with Christians. The last is, or the others two more. Do you guys have any discipleship groups? Yeah, you come here and you hear the message, but this isn't discipleship. I don't ask for your guys' feedback. We don't go back and forth on what we're talking about. I'm teaching you, but a discipleship group is you interacting, saying, whoa, I don't get that. Why would God do that? And I'd be able to answer. So get involved with discipleship groups and get involved with any ministry you can possibly get involved with. Go to Lone Tree. Do Oasis. Do Free Burger Thursday. Do whatever you can go to, because that's going to involve you in ministry. And it's amazing. When you have a walk, you hang out with Christians, you're in a discipleship group, and you just work for God, man, you'll know God's will like that. Ask Adam. Ask any of your leaders. They're here because they know God's will. So my challenge to you is this. If you guys don't feel like you're ready, if you're not ready to go face Goliath, find out why. It's one of those two reasons. Either you don't have a walk the right way, or you're not involved enough, period. And if you guys have any questions about your walk, if you guys have any questions about getting involved, ask any of us. Hang out after service and talk to me. Talk to Adam. Talk to Ray. Talk to Chris. Not Chris. Brandon. Sorry. Talk to Eric. Just talk to any of us. Anyone will help you. That's what we're here for. God has put us in your lives to prepare you. We're not here so we can be special leaders and wear our little badges. And that's cool and all, I guess. We get a t-shirt occasionally, but we're here for you. That's why we're here. We're here to hold you guys and put you where you need to go and help you when you need help. So I wanted to spend some time praying for the Mexico team at the end, but we're a little short on time. So we're going to close in prayer. I want to remind you guys that the Mexico Mission Trips team is out. These people all right here. And you guys can go on to velocityabq.org. You guys can look at their blog. You guys can see what they're going through. Kevin keeps it up to date really well. Keeps pictures on there. The pictures I showed you were from the blog. They have a lot more. And you can kind of just catch up and see what's going on with them. And next Wednesday, not this Wednesday, but the Wednesday after, they'll have a mission night where they'll go over what they did down there. But I want you guys to pray for them. If you guys signed up for the 24/7 prayer, please live up to that. Please. But I'm just going to close in prayer. These are the people here. We'll just leave them running at the end of service. Just so you guys, if you want to see who's on that team, so you guys can maybe think of like one person, hey, I'll pray for Mercedes, you know, just do that. But just pray for them, because they're going to be doing God's work. They've prepared for it, and God's going to pay off. So, but prayer is a big part of that. So, Lord, I just thank you for this day. I thank you for these students. I thank you for the preparation that you poured into David's life. Thank you for such a great example of preparation. Thank you for showing us what it truly is to be a man after your own heart, to be a woman after your own heart. Lord, I pray for the Mexico trip right now. I pray for the missionaries down there, because they did prepare for you. They love you, and they want to share you with that country. And Lord, I just pray for their safety. I pray for your will to be done. And I know you've prepared the Mexico people the same way you prepared the Israelites for David. And Lord, I just pray that they will be there for you, that they will exalt you, and they will show them your love. And Lord, again, I just pray for these students. If any of them have any questions about their walk, if any of them have any questions about what it means to prepare the way you want them prepared, to find out what your will is, Lord, just let them be brave enough to ask a leader. Lord, I just pray for their safety this week. I pray for the safety of all of the missionaries that are out this week that are coming home. We lift these things in your name. Amen.